What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Really. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode. And also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friends.
Happy Monday. Oh, my God. We are so excited. This might be the most like fanboy episode that we have ever created. Today, we have Esther and Melissa, the creators and developers of the Apple Design Award-winning preschool app PocPoc. Although I would argue that it is like all ages. And oh my God. Just this app is, I grew up without a TV, without screens, without anything. And so it's been very interesting to navigate this world with a kid. And I'm also freelance, work from home often, and I'm always on a screen. And so my kid also wants to have a screen sometimes, and we do many screens in our home. But I have searched for apps, and I've downloaded and deleted, and truly the only one that I have on my phone that we use ever is PocPoc. And I am just deeply passionate about it. I play it. He plays it. The whole household loves it. And just at the top to like get everyone excited, we have a link that'll be in the show notes for 25% off the app. It is a paid app. It is higher paid app, and it is worth every penny. I have been paying for it for like 2 years now. And truly the best. Can't say enough. Okay. I think, is that enough gushing in the beginning? We're going to just get into every single thing.
Yeah. Yes. We found the app through Caitlin, as many of the wonderful things in our lives are like we have in our family because Caitlin recommended them. So Caitlin recommended PocPoc to us too. And it has felt different to hand my phone to my kid to play this game than any other handing over my phone feels with him. So we're excited to talk to you about that. Also, my son does insist on calling it Bunk Bunk. I'm not sure if that was one of the name options that you had, but yes, Otto calls it Bunk Bunk. The first time he was like, I want to play Bunk Bunk, I was like, what is this kid talking about? It's Bunk Bunk. Okay. So we often start our interviews and trying to get to know the folks that we have on the podcast by asking about the little versions of you. So if we could just start at the top with little intros about who you both were as little Melissa and little Esther to get a sense of your larger arc, your story, who you are. So maybe we'll start with Melissa. Melissa, if you could tell us about little you, what you could share with us about that person.
Yeah, little Melissa was very shy. And if you know me well now, it doesn't add up because I'm definitely the opposite of shy. But I think that really set the tone for a lot of my play habits as a little kid. And I have an older brother who actually also works in the business a little bit and is in the games industry. And we were very close growing up. And so a lot of my earliest experiences playing were with him. And my like bread and butter dream thing to do as a kid was to tell stories and do a lot of role playing. So my favorite thing, I wanted to be a cashier when I grew up. That was like my dream. At first, I thought I wanted to be a cash register until I realized that it's the person behind it that has all the power. So I was like, actually, I'll have that job. So I loved like playing cash and buying things, giving people change. Esther can attest that I'm horrible at math, but it's always been a weird thing for me that I love doing. And just recently bought my son like his first little like wooden cash register, and he unfortunately is like not into it. It would like crush me. But I'm like, maybe soon. So yeah, I love playing anything that involved like taking care of others and like really just using my imagination to make worlds and play within them. And I was very into dolls, but I don't think I even owned a single Barbie. I think that was something my parents kind of like veered away from with me, but definitely had a lot of like, yeah, storytelling, role playing. That was really my kind of sweet spot. And then I would say like, if I had to choose sort of a secondary thing about little me was that, yeah, I was very silly. So I think I still am now. Like, even though I was very shy, I spent a lot of time performing. So once I was comfortable with people, I was like doing a matinee and an evening show every day for my parents, whatever that even meant. And it was like singing, dancing, flipping upside down. So I did a lot of like gymnastics and dance and loved to be the center of attention once I felt comfortable. And really, I think that like comfort in performing really helped me become, I hope, the strong leader I am today, despite being such a shy kid. So yeah, that's a little bit about little me.
Oh, I love that. And I it's interesting to hear you name the storytelling in you so little, because we see that storytelling playing out in this game. And so we'll get to that later, but I'm really excited to unpack that a little bit more and see how that has evolved in you over time. So thank you for that. And Esther, what about little you? What can you tell us about you when you were younger?
I was also shy, still am. I think Melissa is definitely from like the both of us. She's like the extrovert and I would definitely be more of the introvert unless I like really get to know people and then I will not shut up. That was very similar when I was a kid. I think the overarching theme for my childhood is that I was a very, very, very creative kid. I was always crafting, playing, telling stories, but whenever I was telling a story, there was always like a whole part of crafting coming before I actually got to play, because there was just always so much stuff that had to be made. Give me pen, paper, scissors, and scotch tape, and I was so happy. I remember making, also cash related, I made like wall cash machine, like I do not know the translation. An ATM. Oh my God, why am I so silly? I made an ATM out of paper with like buttons you could actually press when I was like 9. And it had like a little bin on the bottom where you could just like write out then like your banknotes that you would withdraw, because we were playing shops. Everyone was like, all of my friends or like my neighborhood kids had like vintage stores, I guess, which is like knickknacks found around our house. I had a butcher store. Because I wanted to make like little spiral sausages out of paper. So I colored them in. It was like salamis and like bologna and everything was so ridiculous, but very fun to make. I made laptops because I wanted a laptop, couldn't get one. Laptops back then were like chunkers of computers. Like the first, like my dad had one. I wanted one. He wouldn't buy me one. Unfortunately, still hold that against him so many years later. So I made one out of paper with like slides on the side where you could switch the screens. I did not know how a keyboard worked and like that it had like the QWERTY or the AZERTY, so just like ABC, because that was like pretending to type. And I grew up very close with my sister and with my two cousins who were older and my age. And every Friday night we would go to my grandma's, play for the entire evening so my mom could chat with my and just like yap with my grandma and with her sisters. And then like the kids were playing. My grandma had like a big playroom for us with not like an insane amount of toys, but like our imagination was plenty. Again, so much crafting, so much dressing up, so much storytelling. So I was either doing that or playing with the Barbie. So I guess like all of the Barbies that Melissa did not have, I had, because we had a lot.
They all went to your house.
I was like, my mom taught me how to sew. So I sewed them clothes. So I had like a whole spiel when I was like 12, 13 years old, where I wanted to be a fashion designer. And I just like, I won a little Barbie fashion contest around the same time, just for like the fashion that I made for that, which was also very fun. Yeah, I guess so. It's just like everything is so creative in my childhood, and it's something that I still can rely on to this day, and I'm still so crafty. And as long as I can like make little things and just like draw and craft and do my little stuff, I'm very happy. So I'm happy that my parents really encourage that creativity in me, because I feel like there's this quote from Pippi Longstocking that says, I've never done it before, so I think I can do it. And that's like my life mantra for everything.
That's such a good line. We should actually like put that in the office on the wall.
That's basically how we came up with the app. So
yeah. Well, okay. So that takes me to the first question I wanted to ask. But first, I just want to say, I love these intros that you both gave, because I feel like I can see the spirit of those little people in the thing that you've made. Like, I feel like I can see those threads, which I think speaks to a lot of things that I value about the game, which is that it feels creativity forward. It feels like a creative space for kids to exist in and be. And it also feels very, like when you're talking about the crafting and the sewing and the things that you made, Esther, this app has that feel to it. It feels like made and tactile in a way that I don't often experience an app. So I just wanted to name that. Like, very cool to see those threads coming together. And I think this is a question for Esther, but you direct me, either of you, if this is a question that really makes more sense for Melissa. But Esther, we had read that the origin of this app was that you felt this need that for your kid, like a something you wanted to exist for your kid that didn't exist in the world yet, which resonated with us a lot. We feel that way about this podcast. Like, we made this podcast because we didn't see it or hear it anywhere, and we wanted it to exist. And so the spirit of that, it's a mantra for Caitlin, like, make the thing that you don't, or you making the thing that you need in the world. So we were curious about that origin story and sort of the way that you seem, the nuance that you seem to have in your relationship or understanding of screens. I think that a lot of parents in our cohort have so much anxiety about screens, and there's this like sort of fear that like all screens are bad, or that like surely the fewer amount of screens you use, the better, like ways to think about this tool. And you seem to have this nuance about it, of seeing something else you could use this tool for, or a different way that you could, that people could engage this tool that actually would feel different, or maybe we could think about differently. So kind of a big unwieldy question, but wanting to know about maybe how your feelings about screens, or how you think about screens, was part of what you built and how you thought about building something different. How do you approach screen time, and what do you think makes PocPoc distinct in the world of screen time?
So I guess for me, like, the best way to start this is to like give the very short backstory. I will try to keep it short. I will ramble, so stop me if I do. We started making PocPoc, me and my husband, because we are animators by profession, by trade. This is what we went to school for, just like making little animated movies. And we somehow got mixed up into game design when we had graduated from school. We wanted to give our kid, our oldest kid at the time, who was at the time about to turn two, we wanted to give him screen time, because I also had a newborn who was our youngest son, and he was a very hands-on, very intense baby. So we wanted some screen time options for the oldest one to keep him safe and occupied while we had to invest some extra time than we anticipated into the newborn. Aside from that, we were also always on our screens, because like that is just what a remote job entails in game design. Like, we don't even have an office to go into, because we are located in Belgium and they were all the way in Toronto, Canada. It's not like I can just like jump on a blimp and sail there every morning. So we started thinking about ways that our kid enjoyed books, and he really liked those look and search books at the time, with like the big widespread pages where you just like point at things. It was really helping his vocabulary, because it was something that he could do by himself, but we could also do with him, and pointing at things. What is this? What sound does the cow make? What can you tell me about XYZ? And the basic idea for PocPoc is that it's still in the app. It's called the Busy Book. It's like this whole animated spread of things that are somehow related to each other. and it gradually changes. So like you can swipe through the busy book and start off at the world and then have families and have the household things. And then you move out of the house into the backyard and then it goes into the school, stuff like that. It's very associative. And that was like the original core idea for Bok Bok. Then we met Melissa and her brother and the whole thing snowballed into something so much bigger than we ever anticipated, because this was always just, it started out as a hobby project, something I could do off of the couch on my iPad to make sure I did not descend into a postpartum depression that I could really feel sneaking around the corner for myself. And I knew that being creative helped me get out of that rut, because I had it with my oldest son and I really wanted to get ahead of it in a way. So if I could be creative, be on my couch, do something in between all of the other things, caring for the kids. Am I still there? Because I feel like you are all of a sudden a little bit blurry. Okay, cool. So that was why we started Bok Bok. We were looking for apps originally for our kid before we thought of the app that were meeting him at his level. But they were either very addictive and very overstimulating and loud and annoying, and with all of the songs that were never ending, with the yays and the good jobs and the congratulations. And it was really weighing on me. And aside from that, we are native Dutch speakers and it's all in English. So giving our kid a screen where we constantly would have to help him with all of the things that he had to do. Mom, I'm stuck. Mom, what does this mean? What does it say? It would beat the point of giving our kid a screen. So we really felt like there had to be something out there that just felt like the literal toys on our living room floor, but on a screen. Nothing more, nothing less. Just something that would be like, the best toys for a kid are always like the tools that are like a vehicle for their imagination, for their creativity, for them to turn into something else and to make it their own. And I felt that all of the apps that we found, whether were very pedagogical and very educational, quote unquote, or very gamified, were missing that aspect. They're always just like telling our kid what to do, how to process the information on the screen, how to move through the level. There was only like one right answer to then move forward. It was not what we wanted. And we figured something like that, like the toys in our playroom, had to exist in real life on the screen. It didn't. So we started making that. Usually this is like where I hand off like the backstory to Melissa, and I'm sure she has also so many points to make, but that's like, that is my main thing for Bok Bok, is that like I wanted an app that was just like another tool for his creativity, where I could really feel that it was, that the way his brain was working and developing when he was playing with physical toys was very similar to what was happening on the screen, and we couldn't find it, so we made it.
And well done, because that is exactly what it feels like.
Well done. I just want to like call out the like making the thing, using creativity to beat out postpartum depression or any kind of depression, this like, and what it can turn into, like that you didn't set out to create this like life-changing app. You just started right where you were with what you had to make the thing that you needed. And like, wow.
And well, and like you naming and pinpointing the thing that you needed was also the thing that so many other people needed. Like we can feel really alone, I think, in that sometimes, like I'm the only one who's having this problem, or I'm the only one who like is hitting a wall here. But like clearly so many other people felt the same need. So that is also really cool to see you fulfilling that.
I want to just add that, I mean, this was all Esther and her husband, Mateus, who are incredible creators and tinkerers and designers. And when I met them and they were telling me about this little idea that they had, I just kept thinking about how I didn't have kids yet, but I do now. And at the time, I was like, all my friends who were having kids were terrified of screens. And it was a constant conversation that I was a part of, just because of the way my career had gone. I spent a lot of time in the kids' space and then kind of in tech and stuff. So we would always talk about it. And I knew it was a problem that other people were having too. But I didn't, I definitely understood it in like all logical sense. And I knew from growing up too, like we are I mean, I was born in the late 80s and we grew up with a TV in the house, and then we got a computer, but it sat in the computer room and like we all shared it. And it was a very different thing than it is now. But every generation is terrified of the next new technology. And I remember talking to my parents and them being, you know, like they were told TV is going to rot your child's brain. And I think when they were kids and like the first TV came into their home in like the 60s, and early 70s, their parents were combating that. And then by the time my brother and I came around, they realized like, okay, some TV is good, some TV is maybe not as good. And it's more about the content and rather than the actual medium. And I think that was something that we were also really focused on, was thinking about how these mobile devices that are in our pockets are also not necessarily the, you know, enemy, quote unquote, but it's about what content is on them and how we're using that mindfully. And we also have the great privilege of being privileged, and not everybody has that. So when you are a single parent on no income or one income and you have a device, that might be your full-time caregiver. And there are just so many things that have to go into thinking about this as sort of generational issue, rather than just judging parents for letting their kid sit on a phone at the restaurant. And I mean, so we really wanted to create something that helped remove the taboo around screen time, to show parents that they don't have to feel guilty, like, you know, Esther was feeling guilty about letting her kids play these overstimulating other apps. I knew my other friends were having that problem. Now as a mom, even still some days I'm like, oh God, like, do you really want to watch that show? But, you know, I think on the other hand, like, it's all okay. And it's really just about like the screen time diet, just like our own food diet. Like, what are we eating? What are we feeding our kids? Some days it's a ton of crap and other days it's really balanced and you just get through the day. And I think it's so easy to judge, but we just wanted to make it obviously like magical and wonderful and educational for the child. But we were so much so also really passionate about serving the parent, because we just know how hard parenting is. And every day you're like, there's a new phase, there's a new struggle, there's a new question that is often unanswered and you don't really know how to navigate it. And if we could make screen time less of an issue for parents, then we'll have done our jobs. And so I think that really goes into a lot of our kind of core belief system at the company too, is just like, we're all just trying to get through the day, you know?
Yeah. I love, you noted like the attention to thinking about the parents, something that my kid's now 4, and since infancy, the thing that I've struggled with is like playing with him. I'm like, if he's like emotionally dysregulated, I'm the parent, tap me in. If we are like on an adventure, if we're looking at nature, great. But like just to sit down and play is like, I've really struggled to find things that could hold my attention. And this app, like, I'm excited to look at it with him. And recently, like, I'm always on my iPad working. Like, I'm an illustrator. I'm like doing a lot of things. And one of the gifts of that is that I get to spend a lot of time with him. And also he sees me working a lot. And lately he's just curls up on my lap and I am drawing, and then he'll get the drawing game out and he'll draw on Pock Pock. And his newest favorite is the space game.
Otto was just playing that last night.
Oh my God, it's so good. And we do it together, but he's like not needing me. There's some others that we had tried ages ago. He would always be like, something wasn't working and I had to fix it for him, or there was like one desired outcome. And then it felt so pigeonholed. I'm rambling around in circles, but what I really appreciate is how thoughtful, how beautiful, as a designer and a creator myself, handing my child something that it is not beautiful is like really painful to me, because I just like want him surrounded by beauty and thoughtful design. And this is just that. Is, yeah, the sounds are like soothing and lovely. The color palette is like, we're just gushing about how much we love looking at it. But okay, I had a question. I had a thought in there. I really, really did. Okay, I want to circle back to the intro. Something that I felt was interesting in you guys introducing yourselves is that you did it through the lens of play, naturally, because we're talking about an app for play.
That's a good point.
But it just made me think about how important play is and how important the toys that we're giving our kids are. And when we were reading up on you guys, Melissa, I saw that you worked with Disney designing toys. Is that true?
Yeah, I worked at Disney as a designer, but not designing toys, I wish. Designing other products for babies and toddlers. So everything that was a non-toy and non-book. So bottles, strollers, clothing, you name it, like any baby toddler product. And yeah, so I was a designer in my past life. And this is why we also were like, everything has to be beautiful. But actually, the real design power here does not come from me. I'm now like, unfortunately, don't have any involvement in that anymore. It's all Esther and her husband and our creative team who have, yeah, invented and maintained this beautiful style.
Well, I wonder if you guys could speak to, and this, Rebecca, might tie into another question that maybe you were going to ask, but just the power of a toy in a child's life and shaping the way that you talked about your experiences as children, what you are playing with. Like, what do the roles of the toys that we're giving our kids play in their lives, both digitally and analog toys? And I think this might roll into a question about storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Esther also has a lot of thoughts on this. I can just share my two cents quickly, which is, I think it's crucial. I mean, but like all of the learning that happens when we're kids, especially under five, comes from play. And when you're so small, there's no differentiation. It only happens around maybe two, where they're like, I want to go play, and they don't realize they're already playing, you know? My son is 2.5, and he's like, you want to come play with me? And I'm like, I'm literally on the floor playing with you right now. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, everything we do is playing. And even when your kid is like, your baby's putting a piece of paper in their mouth to see what it's like, they're playing, you know? So I think it's just so fundamental to everything we are as humans. And then once you start creating these core memories around certain toys, I think it's why we have this like visceral reaction to things like Lego or Tinker Toy or like that one doll that you had as a kid. Like, I don't know. It's just like an old smell, you know, like when you see an old toy in a window and you're like, I had that toy when I was a kid, and it takes you like right back. And so I think it's so important for us to think about what we give our kids to play with. And it also ties into this whole concept of kids need to be bored so that they are able to find play outside of toys. Because yeah, I mean, the amount of toys, I think every single parent on earth is like, I have too many toys. And there's so much value in not having anything. And that's why we try to also keep Pock so like minimalist in some ways. Like we want to give kids just what they need and nothing more so that they fill in as many gaps as possible. It's also why we have no language in the app, for example. So just having like, I just think it's so important. But I also believe that, you know, similar to putting your kids into different activities and stuff, like you have to give them a lot of, or you don't have to, but it's wise to give them a really diverse opportunity to explore different types of toys. And, you know, Esther and I clearly had our little niches when we were kids of the things that we were into. But even as you were talking, Esther, I was like, oh my gosh, like I crafted every day for my entire life. Like I didn't even think of mentioning that. But it's funny how like that was not the thing that I felt like defined my childhood, because I think it was the one thing I often did by myself, because my brother like didn't give a shit about crafting. And I'm the one no one in my family was a crafter. I was like solo crafting. And like my best core memories were playing with others. And like, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to unpack that with my therapist probably. But like, I feel like there's just so much value in what we give our kids to play with. That's also not to say like, you know, to overthink it too much also, because like, I think as parents, we have like this gut reaction of, what does this toy like bring out in my kid? And do I like that? And do they like who they are when they're playing with this thing? And sometimes you have to make an editing decision. And I think that's also fine, you know, because they have to figure it out. We have to figure it out. Yeah.
I quickly want to add that I think play is so crucial for not just kids, but honestly for everyone from birth to passing away. Is that like it's a way for people to make sense of the world and for kids to start learning about the world around them and how they relate to that world around them and how the world relates back to them and how it helps form who they are and what their interests are. And with Pock Pock, the reason why we keep adding new toys and why it's not just like one and done toy and why it went beyond the busy book is because we feel that while we have our very popular toys, like the town toy with that resembles like the play rugs that we all used to have as a kid with the roads where we could drive with the cars and everything, we all had that. And that's just like an extension of that, but digitally. We also have toys that are more specific to a niche, like our sequencer toy where you can make music, like the dinosaur toy where you can play with the dinosaurs, to both offer kids something that we are sure they will really like, and then offer them new things so we can help them discover new niches and new interests and give them a new, like we think it's very important for kids to have windows out into the world to discover new things, to learn about new things that they don't see in their daily life, to find and discover about people that they don't have in their friend group, in their family group, to like learn new things about the world. But at the same time, also have mirrors that reflect themselves and their family and their friends back to them, whatever that might look like. Hence why Pock Pock is also, it's obviously, it will always be a work in progress, but Pock Pock is also very inclusive. We try to be the most inclusive toy app for kids in the App Store and on the planet, frankly. And it'll always be like a work in progress because it'll like accessibility and like the inclusive aspect as the world continues to evolve, it's a never ending story. And that's what makes the world so interesting. But at the same time, it's also something that we always continually have to come back to time and time again with our team to make sure that like that continues to be reflected in the app.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
This is such a delicious conversation. I feel like I want to unpack like 90 things in what you both just shared. But I had one very like tiny technical question I wanted to ask about that I think our listeners would be interested in. I noticed reading about the app that you refer to like each little, okay, just for reference for people, you open up the app, it makes beautiful sounds. And there's like, I don't know how many is it, like 20 different circles. And each one is a different thing that a kid can click on or an adult and experience a different kind of game. But you call them toys, not games or apps. So can you just explain that shift in language or like how you chose toy instead of game or app or however, like why that's the word?
Well, game isn't necessarily a bad thing, first off. Like, there's so many fun games and there are so many fun board games as well. So even like it, even if it's not on a screen, like you have the board games, you have the physical games that still are games. And games are defined by rules, by an end goal, and by the winning and losing aspect. There are, even if there is not a winning or losing aspect, there are always like a set of rules where you have to adhere by. Whereas like with a toy in a playroom, like a kid can come in, see a stack of blocks. The kid can build a tower, can build a castle. It's all up to them and what they bring to the table, not just in skill set, how well can the kid build a tower? How old are they? How like that also, like what is their skill set in building a tower? Do they want to build a tower? Or do they just like want to build a tower and topple it over? The blocks are not going to tell that kid, you did it wrong. Boo, you failed. It's not going to punish the kid for doing it wrong. It's all about the intention that they come into the playroom with. How big of a tower do I want to build today? How difficult do I want to make it for myself? What's the challenge that I set? And that's all like happening unconsciously. Like no kid is coming into the playroom and thinking like, what am I going to do today? How hard do I want to make this on myself? What has my day been like? It's more about again, like I keep coming back to toys being tools for kids, vehicles for their imagination, for their creativity. What do I want to do today? And Pock Pock is just an extension of that. Hence why we feel that toys were more, it felt more applicable to what it actually was as opposed to just a game. But it is still a hard distinction to make to people sometimes.
Yeah, branding wise, it's like we're always actually rethinking this because people are like, so there's a physical toy? Like what? How do we get it? And we're like, so we actually have to kind of, it's a constant process internally to figure out like, is that actually the right way to market it? Even though for us, we all speak, like we call the designers on our team like toy designers, not like video game designers or app designers.
But that really shows up in the game. Like you can feel that. That is the, I think that is the distinguishable difference of this versus another thing. And Rebecca, this was, it goes to this perfectionist thing that you've been talking about with yourself and Otto, which has started showing up with Charlie. We didn't have a whole episode about that. But there's not a wrong way to do it.
Yes. As soon as you said, Esther, like games come with rules, is like, oh, that is the difference. I hope that it works with marketing for you to keep calling them tools, because I think that there's something, or toys, I think there's something really useful in my brain about like thinking about it that way and what is different about this. And I'm thinking so much about the way you talk about toys and the way that I witness what's happening when Otto is interacting with this is just the experience of it. It also reminds me, Melissa, of what you were talking about with like, what did you say about like the kid, everything is play, like even when you put the thing in your mouth and that's play? Yeah, it's like play. And it's like I'm playing and experiencing the world and learning about the world all at the same time. And that is what this app, these toys offer, is an experience and an exploration. And so I guess my next question for either or both of you is around the design of the experience and the world. It feels like the world that you're creating with these experiences. Esther, you were talking about like the windows and mirrors, the inclusivity of all of that. I definitely noticed immediately the wheelchairs that show up, right? Because I'm a full-time wheelchair user. I know you can't see it in the screen, but I'm a full-time wheelchair user. So I'm like, there's not even just one wheelchair. There's like lots of wheelchairs in this world, which feels so good for me to be able to share that with my son, for him to see that. But it's also like pride flags. It's also one of the toys is like dressing all of these different characters. And there's the option for all of them, all of the four different limbs to have prosthesis, right? Like there's just so much built in and woven into this world that clearly seems intentional. And in the world building, and I'm sure a million things that I haven't even noticed yet that went into that. We talk so much on this podcast about storytelling and like what stories about the world our kids are learning through us and in the world. And it feels like you are also thinking about storytelling. I don't know if that's the word you would use, but thinking of Melissa's early storytelling impulses, like I guess my question is, can either of you or both of you speak to the world that you are building into this app, into this experience, and the decision processes that went into that? So some of the, like, what were the intentions? What is the world you want kids to experience here? What are the stories that you're hoping to tell through all of these different toys?
Here's the thing, like, we wanted an experience first and foremost that, like, once the parent, like, gets the app and gets through that like quick, you know, onboarding and they pay for it and everything, that like this, like the children will never see anything but their toys. Like no pop-ups, no ads, no bullshit, no locked toy, no hidden, like it's just play. Like if you imagine you're in your playroom and you have like a locked box of toys, your kid's just going to stand there and bang on it until they can open it. Like it's just, it was insane to us that all these other children's apps had so many like paywalls and like hidden tricks. And so talking about the experience, like first and foremost, we wanted this to be accessible for a two-year-old alone. That's it, like hard stop. So, and Esther's son James was our first play tester and he was two, and we needed to make sure like he could open the app himself and find his way to a toy. And it's also why that what we call the playroom, which is the white space with circles and each one represents a toy. Those actually can be played with. Like you can bonk them together and like move them around. And so that even if a child was, you know, even 18 months, you know, which we do see occasionally, that they have something to just hand slap and see cause and effect and get to know the screen in a really calm and gentle way. So we wanted the whole experience to just be like as pure as possible for the child. And there are definitely, like, I will admit, like business repercussions to that, because very, you know, the other apps are all doing it the other way for a reason. It's because it's easier to make money and it's easier to retain your users and all of those things. But this was a huge sticking point for us that we've never conceded on. And I hope we never do, because it's so crucial that kids are not interrupted. And that feeling of failure of like, oh, I'm stuck. They're like, oh, like I can't do it. And that's just a crappy feeling for any kid. And that's not because it was designed for them and they still can't do it. It's because it was designed for like a 30-year-old parent who should be able to, you know, whose job it is to help navigate that stuff. So experientially from me specifically, like that was a huge thing that I was really passionate about. And I know like Esther, like we all are on the same page with it, but that's a big thing. It's just like setting the tone of like, this is a safe space for your kid. The second you're in the app, you can hand it off to your kid and fall asleep on the airplane with them sitting next to you, knowing they're not going to accidentally buy a TV on Amazon or like, you know, get out of, you know, get into any trouble or get stuck and have to wake you up.
Well, I feel like this is a good place to interject that like there is a high price point on this when you're comparing it to other apps. And I feel like that could feel jarring, but like you literally get like it's all there and it's like updating. Like it's so exciting when we come in and the apps or the toys have updated, the toy room shifts, or like a new one comes into the center, or like all like the town turns Christmas. There is, for me, just knowing that like I don't need to go search out, Rebecca and I were talking about this before, it's like this is like 50 apps in one, or maybe like 20. And so I don't need to like spend a dollar or two on like all these different apps that have all these pop-ups and are asking me to buy more money. It's just like the ease of it and the honesty and the like security, the like sense of like complete, I just feel so safe handing him my phone like this. And this is probably derailing in another direction, but pulling him off of Pock Pock is the same effort of pulling him away from playing Matchbox cars. As isn't to say there is some resistance at times. And also we don't melt down afterwards. He's not dysregulated the way if I take a show away, like we end the show. So we have been working to zero shows and he's allowed to have Pock Pock anytime he wants. And that works well because he puts it down on his own. Like it is not addictive. And it also like when I need him to like, I need a moment, I'm like, here, do you want to play Pock Pock? And it will hold his attention, but there's not this like, he doesn't zone out. I completely derailed this.
It's such an important part of how we designed Pock Pock, like from the beginning, in the sense that I feel personally that like when apps were becoming a thing on tablets, a lot of designers and app developers just like took what worked for adults, slapped the kids' IP on there, big eyes, cute animals, cutesy voices, and called it a day without considering that kids don't know how to get out of these dopamine cycles for the reward and the levels and the another apple to collect before I can move on, or just one more coin, mom, stuff like that. It's very hard for kids to, like, even for adults with all the social media, it's so hard to, like, get out of that dopamine cycle. And I can see why parents are so apprehensive towards screen time for their kids, just because we know how badly it can affect us. And we kind of project that fear already onto our kids. With Pock Pock, we wanted to set the bar for kids for the screen time and the media that they consume very high right from the start. And I remember my son James, who was around like 5 at the time, experiencing like other kids' apps at some kind of like children's media festival. And he was like, Mom, what do I do? How does this work? This is ridiculous. Nothing's happening here. Like, he was muttering about like how stupid the app was. and that's just because like Pak was so logical and it was meeting him at his level, making sense to him and to all of the kids that just like interact with it without dumbing it down either. Because I think that's for us also a big part of why parents really enjoy playing with, like, we hear that so often, honestly, of parents saying like, I play Pak to unwind. We hear from like teens with anxiety that they are playing Pak. We hear of people on the neurodiverse spectrum playing Pak to stim or wind down or help calm themselves down. We're like, Pak isn't childish, but it's childlike in a way that still appeals to our inner child in a way, I think.
Yes. I love that so much. Yes.
Like, if you were to put like a pile of Legos here in front of us, imagine we're all sitting at the same table in the same room and not just like all across the world. Like, we would all be playing with those Legos. It's not that like we are playing with something that doesn't work for us. Like, we can all, depending on like where's, like, again, with the intentions, with the skill level, with like whatever you want to do today, like, if you don't want to play with the Legos, that's fine. If you want to build like a whole town or a city, beautiful, let's do it. Same thing with Pak. Like, it doesn't, it's not annoying to a parent. It's why we all love watching the Pixar movies with our kids again, or like the Bluey stories, like all of the Bluey episodes that really resonate with parents as well. It's because like it's made for the parents as well, for the kids, because it handles different subjects. It handles difficult subjects sometimes with grace, with ease, without dumbing things down or without making it too silly or too difficult. And kids, if they don't understand it, they know like I can come back to this and still understand it in a little while. And I think that's, again, as a tool, as a toy, that's where Pak comes in as well.
This feels like I am always screaming about like children are whole people. Like, a baby is an entire person. And I think we culturally, especially in the United States, there's this like children are these like other things. They're like not full. They're not like real yet. And we make things so dumb for them. And then it's so annoying for us. And when you were saying like even an 18-month-old could move through this and a 2-year-old can fully function in it, that is the thing that makes it interesting for me as well. At 36, where I sometimes struggle to find, like, because of my neurospicy brain and just the way that my body moves through the world, it's hard for me to play with my kids sometimes. And I don't know exactly what that thing is. I think it's like the open-endedness, the beauty of it. But whatever makes it so that a 2-year-old can play with it without any like additional support somehow also is the thing that makes it good for me. And my 18-year-old niece, who has like a lot of anxiety, who like zones out on this app and like gets regulated and calm.
You know, my grandfather, before he passed away, he was playing a lot of Pak. And he was like very like mentally there still, like in his late 80s. And he was always telling me like, kid, you've got to get this in the retirement homes. Like, you know, like it's so good for my fine motor skills just to maintain them. And also just to use my creative brain. And he was always advocating for that. And I was like, yeah, we would love to, but like, we have to start somewhere. And like trying to explain that, like, we couldn't do it all at once. But it's so funny because we've had over the years a few like app reviews from people who have identified as seniors and say like, oh, I play this with my grandkids and I also play it myself. And I think it also just goes back to this whole thing of like when we're feeling overstimulated and dysregulated, I think many of us tend to go like scroll Instagram, like something instead of doing something else. And we've had so many parents say that like they use Pak when their kid goes to bed, just for a few minutes to like have a little fidget spinner almost. And that is a huge part of why I think Pak has a lot of magic in it, because it's not something we even like outright intended to do. We're like, we're going to make this like 0 to 99, you know? We just felt like if we can meet kids at their level, it'll be great. And that was really like the bar. And it turns out that we're not actually all that different than them. And to your point, Caitlin, about like having trouble playing with your kid, I feel like every parent must have been there too, to some level. Like I think it's also a spectrum of like how much we all get into it in a certain day and what we're doing and what mood you're in. And I'm very pregnant. I don't know if you can't see, but I'm due with my second in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I can't play. I'm like, you can drive a car over my belly, or like, I can read you a book. I'm like, I cannot. I'm like barely getting on and off the floor. And so my play level has been just like diminishing for the last, I would say, like 2 months. And it's so funny because my son now knows, like, he comes to me for like quiet, what I'm calling quiet play, which is like snuggling. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes to my husband when he's like, let's like lift me up in the air. And, you know, he wants to be like thrown around and like he needs to expel energy, or like they want to race cars through the house. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to be sitting over here doing something else. And I think like having ways to play with your kid that meet your needs are so important, because they know when you're not really playing. Like they can sense it. And if you're not having fun, they're not going to have fun. So I'm a big believer also in finding the play with your kid that works for you. Like I love crafting with my son. My husband's like, they've never sat at the craft table without me ever. And like, that's fine because they do other things together. But like, yeah, if like Pock is the way to connect with your kid, then like, amazing. Like, I think it doesn't have to be, I don't know, like there's such a stigma around it still. And that's what really bugs me, because no one wants to feel judged. And I think the people who judge you are always the ones who don't have to. You know, I can't tell you how many people over the years have been like, yeah, I always said I'm never going to have a screen time kid or like an iPad kid. And then they had kids and realized the reality of the world we live in, that it can actually be like a pretty amazing tool. And so many of our like business associates and employees and, you know, our customers have said those things to us. Like, yeah, we never thought we would let our kid use a device, but here we are. And this is the one thing, or like one of three things, that I really feel comfortable about. And to us, it's kind of the highest compliment. So hopefully people's ideas can change.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for your generosity and talking with us today, but maybe even more so for like following that spark of knowing that this was a need. I'm not sure if we've said it enough, but we love Pock Pock. So is there anything else that there's something you wanted to speak to that you want to name before we hit the end record button?
Thank you. That's very sweet. Thank you. We love you guys. And thank you so much for advocating and supporting us. And thanks to both of your boys for playing and loving it. And if they ever have questions or feedback or want to see something, like, email us. Seriously, I would say like a good chunk of what we make comes from the community. So we're really active on Instagram and TikTok, and we really want to know, like, what do your kids want? So, and what do you want also? But yeah, no, thank you so much. I mean, I don't know if we don't have any like crazy news to share other than that we have, you know, we have new content coming out. I guess it's almost like every like 8 weeks now. So we have a lot going on, and stay tuned. And yeah, thanks again.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Go download Pock Pock. Yeah, and check out in our show notes, we will have the link for the 25% discount.
And you can also try it for 7 days.
It's free for a week, yeah.
And I really, really like that part of what we explored in our discussion today was just like how inclusive this app is and how that transcends age. Like I definitely don't, like, people who don't have kids, it's still something worth checking out. I second and third and underscore that. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.